Hey, what's up, Laser fans? Welcome to We Have a Take, the What podcast. I am Tara Bowen Biggs, joined as always by Rose Harding. Hello, Rose.
Hi, Tara. How are you doing today?
I am doing excellent, I think. The sun is out, so that is good. How about
you? It's cold, though.
Yeah, it's kind of exciting. Fall is coming, but it's sunny. And I don't know, I ran into a neighbor on my walk today. And I was like, I'm loving this weather. And I'm just waiting for the other shoe to fall. Like, how are we going to pay for this?
Yeah, right around now is when I turn on my National Weather Service Twitter alerts so that I see like when they tweet, because it starts to get to the season where it gets really windy, where like there gets to be ice. And this morning I woke up and I saw that there's snow in the Cascades. So we're swiftly transitioning to that like cool weather situation. And I don't know about you, but like I live in a neighborhood with just like tons of trees. So like the first few winds of the year, it's like power usually goes out at least once, because like, you know, like the debris that hasn't been shaken off those trees for a long time comes down, and the odds of like it taking a power line with it are pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm the loving the view of the snowy mountains right now. Cause you know, most of the winter it's going to be all cloudy and we're not going to be able to see them, but we can see them from the city right now. And I love a fluffy white mountain.
Yeah. Same. Actually, sometimes I'll like go, I was thinking that sometimes this winter I might go into my office on a clear day, just because where my office is like, it's like on like the 10th floor or something. Mm-hmm. And you get a perfect like corner view of basically Mount Hood and Mount St. Helens.
Lovely.
And on a clear day, it's just perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very lovely. And perfect. And shall we transition to talking about the Blazers?
Not as lovely, not as perfect, but still in our hearts.
But still, these guys are playing so hard. They are trying so hard. And I'm starting to get, when I see that Blazers PR tweet, I just get mad. Just because it's like with the injury report, I feel like we're being like cheated out of what could be like really, really fun. But I understand it's all part of the growth. It's all part of the journey for the team. But it just seems so unfair.
It really does. And it's so funny because I have a friend who is a big basketball fan that lives in Canada. And but he loves LeBron, and he tweeted at me the other night and he was like, man, Bron still got it against the Blazers. And I wanted to be like, these guys have been Blazers for 2 seconds. Some of these guys were playing for the Remix like yesterday,
an hour ago. Yeah.
Chill. If he can't do it here, like, come on. I was very annoyed.
I went to the Remix game on Friday, the home opener, and I was like literally going to go down to the huddle and be like, hey, if anybody wants a ride to go play in the Blazer game tonight, I got room in my car. And then I remembered I didn't have room in my car. So I decided not to do that.
Oh, well, you know, the logistics didn't work out, but maybe next time. Weird they play on the same day. I didn't think about that, but it's weird for the fans that they play on the same day, and also maybe for the players.
Yeah, I don't know if the players can. I mean, I know that I think that they can play if it's logistically possible. I don't know if there's any rules against it. We'll have to ask Eric if he knows. Poor Eric is now like getting all the questions anybody ever has about the G League. Because he's like the Kenny's G League. That was right. Really fun to talk to Eric and Kelsey last week going into the Remix opening. I was really glad we were able to get a few things to look for, which I hadn't noticed before. Like the, you know, the free throw, how that's different. And
yes.
Stuff like that.
The rule differences are very interesting to me. Things I didn't know. Things where I'm like, oh, I'm like, I've like watched clips of the G League, but I never like really sat down and really thought about the differences in the rules. And like, mm-hmm. I don't know. It was nice to hear from folks who like focus on the G League, like what's different about the G League from the NBA and how it translates to like, you know, the games that we watch all the time.
That first game when Wap Reith went off, that was so fun. I was like, oh my God, we have a center who can shoot sitting there?
Yes. And he's big. Like, he's big and tall. Like, I was thinking about how often we were playing undersized centers in the last like 10 years, like guys who are like 6'9", 6'10". Not that the, I mean, not that 6'10" is like particularly undersized, but like Reith is like
Big. Yeah.
proper big.
Yeah.
Nurk was big, but like Nurk was also big and wide. Like Reith is like big and tall and long and yeah. I was
Yeah.
very excited for him.
And I'm glad he's getting a chance to play. And like we were having there was a discussion in the Trailcasters Discord about Reith's 3-point shooting, because some people were saying, okay, dude, you've taken enough. We don't need to see any more. But I come on the side of like, who cares? Let him shoot right now. Because like we saw that he can shoot the three. And if he can get into an NBA game and shoot the three, and just enough so that the other team notices, you know, we don't have anything to lose right now. Like I think if he's still missing at the rate that he's missing, you know, 2 weeks from now, then it's a discussion. But for right now, while there's no one else to come in, I guess there's Moses Brown. You know, let it fly. And if he gets you know, on enough of a hot streak and enough of a rhythm and gets used to being in the NBA situation and starts hitting a third of his threes, let him do it. It's a whole
Yeah.
different look that we're not used to.
I was thinking about how like we kind of tried that look out when we were running like with Myers Leonard or Zach Collins. We would just let them like shoot a few of out there like all the time. Like Myers Leonard feels like that was like what he was supposed to do, honestly. Zach Collins had a little bit more in his bag than that, but like, you know, like I think that there's something great about that like popping up on the scouting report so the guys have to like respect it. I mean, obviously he hasn't played that many games yet, but you know, if it starts showing up on scouting reports, that can only be good for us.
Yeah, and I think, you know, he it makes sense to just go ahead and give him a little bit more time to try, as opposed to just like yanking him. Gosh, I felt so I'm really mixed about I'm not mixed on Shaden. I'm still very high on Shaden, but I worry about the situation that he has been put in terms of it's him and Skylar, and they're the guards, and they have to do everything, and there's no rest, and there's no like immediate feedback on all the like turnovers and stuff, because you just got to keep playing. You can't come out. There's nobody to come in behind you. And so like, I don't know, does that worry or concern you at all?
I mean, it worries me in that, well, okay, well, two things. It worries me, yes, because I'm like, this is how guys get injured. And two, this is also how guys set bad habits.
That's
Those are the,
just those are both big concerns.
like, I'm sorry, I know that we're injured and I know we have to play guys, but like, we have to give him a reasonable amount of time to rest so that he can like take care of his body. Like, yes, he's young, but young guys can still get hurt too. And we want to make sure that like if he's going to be with us for like the long haul, we should invest in his long, I mean, honestly, we should invest in everybody's like long-term health, like regardless, but like especially if the franchise is invested in like him long-term, we should be taking care of him. Like he's going to be here long-term, like when his body isn't like 23 years old or whatever. Like so I worry a little about the injuries. I also worry about those bad habits, like because I do think the guys who like I was remember how we were talking like several weeks ago about the guys who like spent time like on those like Sixers teams and those teams that were
Yes.
tanking. Like you learn bad habits when you play like that, and like even if you are a good player, like your instincts get like tweaked and like ways that you have to untweak when you're trying to win. And I don't know.
I felt like they were at the beginning of the year before everybody got injured, they were set up so well to be able to pair our young guards up with veteran guards. And I was so excited for that. Whether or not it was, you know, Scoot being paired with Ant or Shaden being paired with Ant or Brogdon being paired, you know,
Yeah.
however, just being able to play together on the floor. And so I worry about like, you know, will 10 turnovers phase Shaden? And then I remembered that Shaden doesn't get phased by anything. So at least we've got that going for us. I was talking to my husband today. By the way, it's his birthday, so happy birthday, Charlie. But
Yay, happy birthday.
I was talking to him about Shaden and his 10 turnovers and worried about him getting shaken by that. And then I remembered that Halloween video of Shaden going through the
Haunted
haunted
house.
house and not being scared by anything or even remotely startled by anything. And I thought, you know what, maybe he's gonna be okay. He seems like unshakable. And maybe that will also translate into like his game as well. Like nothing's gonna, he's just gonna like go look at the film, learn from it, and keep going.
I love that so much because I that video is very memorable to me because like not only is he not fazed, but he's like hyping up the people who work there. He's like, "You got this, girl, you got this."
And then Scoot and is it Scoot and Jabari or somebody, whoever is with him is just like screaming and clutching each other. Shane's just walking through.
He's like, "Oh, they're really scared, huh?"
So maybe we can make we can infer from that that he'll be okay.
I wanted to share one little Shaden reflection that I noticed that I thought you would appreciate. So I know you're often watching in game, like you're at the game. So when I watch at home, I get to see some of the like action close up and like replays and stuff like that in slow motion. And so I've been like running this thesis through my head. I've just been like marinating on it for a little bit and trying to decide. I'm like, does Shaden look more comfortable on defense to me this year? And it from like the bird's eye view, it feels like he is. He doesn't get stuck in some of the ways he used to get stuck or get lost. You know, sometimes he would get lost last season. In a replay, I distinctly saw him directing traffic on a switch. And I was like, oh, like confidently directing traffic on the switch. And I thought that that was like, I mean, I don't know how, you know, we don't always get like a close up look to like how much the guys are communicating, like kind of like in game when it's not like overt. But like this was him very, very distinctly communicating a switch to one of his teammates and like making it really well. And I thought that that was like a really nice area of growth for him because I don't always see him chattering, but like to see him talking more on defense, I feel like shows that he's a little bit more confident than he wasn't like last season.
Oh, that's so great. I love hearing that. Guys like Ant and Shaden, who are just, I think, naturally quiet, you know, the coaches spend a lot of time trying to get them to to talk. And like that's one of the great things about Jabari is that he's never been, quiet on talking. And to see some of these guys who are a key part of the offense talking, even if they're playing, even if it's about defense that they're talking, it just it shows it shows sounds like growth to me, which is all that this year is about, growth, focusing on growth.
Speaking of growth, this is like a total aside. Speaking of growth, did you see Scoot's video with Jeremiah 1 and 5? 5 and 1, 1 and 5? I don't remember the order. Do you know who Jeremiah is? He's this kid who's like maybe like 10 or 11 years old who interviews like athletes on sidelines, and he like went viral a few times, like interviewing like NFL players on the sidelines of games. And now I think he gets invited out. Well, he did one with Scoot. He came to
He
the
did.
yeah he came to the game and he was wearing Scoot shoes. I noticed him wearing Scoot's Pumas and they were wearing the same shoes, and he did a little interview with him at the practice facility, and it was very sweet. You should check it out.
Oh, I will. That sounds awesome. Well, one of the things that I want to talk to you today about is I've been tracking some team metrics. They're the ones that I tweet after every game. And we talked about it with on our interview with Caitlin Cooper. And my plan is the one, a lot of the numbers that Caitlin Cooper gave us were like player specific things to watch for growth in certain players. So I'm not going to talk about those this time, but I will do that another time. But I thought we could get caught up on where we are with the ones I have been tracking. And I'm also kind of like wondering if I'm tracking the right ones given what we've seen so far from this team. So I am open and to any thoughts you have about like maybe that's not the one we want. So here is a rundown on where they are. So obviously dunks and the Blazers are at this point averaging 5.3 dunks per game. So I every game feel like the Blazers hate dunking. But this statistic shows me that that is not the case. They are actually dunking even more on average than they were last year. And remember how excited we were last year because that they were dunking more than they were the previous three seasons. So they're still like league rank 22, but like that's better than 30,
That's
which is
true.
where they were for a long time. It was really funny because I tweeted when I the other night when I tweeted out why do the Blazers hate dunks? I had a few Phoenix Suns fans respond to me like implying that like ha 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 you thought you were getting a dunker you got DeAndre Ayton and I was like that's not the burn that you think it is. Sorry, dudes. Like DeAndre is still out dunks Nurkic because he grew up, you know, that he does. Anyway, okay,
Which is not
so
to say we don't love Nurkic, but Nurkic was not a dunker.
right. And we accepted that. And I also accept the fact that on DeAndre is also not a dunker on the scale of many, many other centers in the league. But on balance, they are dunking more than they were before. Okay, so that's dunks. Fast break points, they are currently averaging 14.2, which ranks them 14th in the league. So that's right there in the middle. It's kind of hard to tell if this number is telling us anything because it really ranges from game to game.
Yeah, I do think that's where a lot of our dunks are happening.
I think our dunks are mostly happening in putbacks,
Oh,
but
interesting. Okay.
that would be really good to you totally could be right. In my mind, I'm remembering putbacks, but that would be super cool to go find out. So I will make a note of that.
We do miss some fast break points, like in like layups and dunks. Notice that.
Okay, so fast break points, like their lowest was 7 and their highest was 24, and it's really like all over the board. So I'm not sure what we're getting out of that stat, but it's
I mean,
there.
we might just be look we might like the growth might just be looking for more consistency as the season goes on, as unless like volatility from game to game.
And all these are kind of hard to track also because they're missing so many key components.
Yeah. So
So
also
which,
small sample size.
yeah, small sample size, all that. And also like just which ones are really going to tell us something about their growth. And fast break points might be one because that has always been something that the coaching staff has seemed to want to do more of. And so maybe it's worth hanging on to that one for a while. Okay, next is free throw attempts. So the average free throw attempts are 20.9. They are 20th in the number of free throw attempts.
I feel like that feels right.
And it ranges a lot. Again, lowest was 9, highest was 36.
Has it gone
So
down since Malcolm Brogdon's been out? Because I feel like it's gone down since Malcolm Brogdon's been out.
a little bit, but not we lost Brogdon. Okay, that date. I don't think there's that much difference.
Okay.
And so much of that is also dependent on, what the refs are feeling that night.
Yeah.
And I think there's a better, I'm going to look when I'm looking at the individual player stats, but Caitlin was suggesting it was like free throw attempts per shot, or what's the average of that? So I might look at that and maybe we want to revise that.
Oh, which is about a more of like a reflection of the speed of the game,
Right. So
is of
rather
how
than
many
per
yeah.
game, how many free throws? I think it's per possess, or maybe it's per possession. But that might be more indicative than just per game.
I was wondering how much it was going to hurt us that like we don't have guys that like are going to like I don't know be getting calls yet per, like as far as like the refs have like their like the reputation of players because everyone's so new and a lot of the times the young guys are not going to get the benefit of the doubt.
I'm kind of shocked at how few calls DeAndre gets and how many Shaden gets. Like Shaden is getting to the line a lot more than I expected. I would love to go and compare like him and his, first meaningful minutes season compared to like Anfernee's first meaningful minute seasons, or CJ's, because remember, CJ didn't get to the line very much either, at least when he was first getting started. So that would be an interesting to follow up on. But I've been impressed with how much Jaden is getting up there. And I feel like with DeAndre, he's not totally comfortable yet. And he's playing with guys who are still getting used to playing with him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he loves that that mid-range. So he's not actually like close to the basket a lot either. So like he usually has a lot of room when he's shooting because nobody's like out guarding that area.
I just had a thought. And I wonder if, what has DeAndre Ayton been passing? I want to know what his assists look like this year.
Yeah. I don't know. That would be a good thing for us.
Yeah.
To look at.
Okay. So he has 2-0-3-0. Yeah. No. He has not been assisting very much in the last. Like, so what I was going to say is his shots get a lot harder if they know that he's like not comfortable making those passes out to the perimeter because everybody knows he's not going to pass. They can just collapse on him.
Yeah. But it's amazing how it is money when he gets it in the mid range.
Yeah.
It is like, oh, that's going in. so that's kind of fun.
He looks like he has like a nice high release point too. Like a, you know, like not hard. Very blockable.
Oh God. Well, we're going to play Chet tonight. So we'll see how that goes.
Oh my God. Well, DeAndre's stronger than Chet. I've been watching quite a bit of the Thunder this season, and like Chet is big and long and he's athletic and he's super smart, but he's not super strong. And I wonder what he's going to be like trying to bang with Ayton for space.
Yeah, that is that'll be fun to watch. Okay, moving on to turnovers. They have the fourth most turnovers of any team.
That feels
right. Not the good kind of four.
Yeah.
Not like fourth in the league. No, it's like the other kind of fourth in the league. So they're averaging 16.3, but honestly, I'm just not going to get mad about that. And that's another one where it's like, is it really worth tracking at this point? Because there's just going to be a lot of turnovers. And so I'm like,
yeah,
I'm not sure if that's really worth our time. What do you think?
I mean, it would be nice to see that number go down and the assists to go up, but you know, I'm not like heavily invested in like knowing if I see the assists go up, I don't really need to know what the turnovers look like. Cause I think that like,
yeah,
you know, assist to turnover ratio, that's like that's half of what you're looking at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we're not looking at, like, last year we looked at assists and passes, and this year we're like not even trying that. But maybe especially because we have so much focus on these young guards, adding assists back would be, because they're dead last right now, I believe, in assists. If not,
yeah, especially
dead last, very low.
The argument also for adding assists is that we don't, like, we have a very different look at point guard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I like adding back assists.
It also feels just like a little more optimistic than turnovers.
Have you looked at how many assists they're getting?
Well, I mean, like,
hope. There's hope built into it.
Yeah. Yeah. And like turnovers, it just feels like it's negative. I don't know. Just
yeah,
feels negative.
That's true. Yeah. No, I think I respect your point there on that one for sure. Okay, so there's two more. There's fouls and pace. So again, fouls, they are the 11th. They have the 11th most fouls per game at 20. And then for pace, they are at 98.3, which is 22. So how valuable do you think it is to continue to do fouls, being there's so many like factors involved? There's like rep, like, how are the refs feeling tonight?
I don't know. Like, so that kind of like, how are the refs feeling tonight variance, I feel like should just bear out over the course of the season for every team.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't like hate that stat.
Yeah. I actually kind of thought they would be worse.
Yeah. Cause like everyone's so young. And also like a lot of these guys are like first, second, third year guys who are still learning how to like play defense without fouling or without like vet players like stealing fouls off them because they know how to like play that game.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I would like to, maybe that's worth tracking just to see how it like trends over the course of the year if they get better at that,
you know. And I think if we switched out turnovers for assists, then fouls will balance out our like hope versus like non-hope.
Yeah,
Because
pessimism.
both turnovers and fouls are both like, bad things that you don't want them to do. And if we like sort of switch that around to like assists are a good thing that you want them to do, and we want to see that number grow, and fouls are just, something that we're going to just keep our eye on and look for improvement in. And then the last one was pace. So they're at 98.3. They're at number 22. So, I wonder if, given the turnover in the personnel, we just need to wait for this one to stabilize, or
Yeah.
it maybe it's just too dependent on the opponent and what the opponents are able to do. What do you think?
I think it also has to do with inconsistency at point guard because point guards really set the pace. And, we don't really know what it's going to look like because we have our third string point guard. And don't get me wrong, I love that we have a third string point
Yes.
guard, but like, it's not going to be the pace of the game that theoretically we're going to end the season on, hopefully.
Yeah, and we should be able to theor I guess in theory, once we get our ball handlers back, we should see that number improve. And if that number doesn't improve, that is something that we should ask questions about.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
So we'll hold on to that one. So I'm going to say turnovers. We'll flip that and replace it with assists. The other thing that I'm wondering that we should be tracking, and I so don't want to track it, but I'm like, oh my God, maybe we should be tracking this, is opponent dunks. How many dunks our opponent
How
gets?
many we give up?
Yeah. Or do we just not want to even? We'll just let,
Dunks?
yeah. Because here's how I get dunks. I look at the play-by-play. After every game, there's immediately a play-by-play published, and I do a search for dunks. So I'll see like a total of 14 dunks. And so then I'll go through and I'll go which ones were the other team and which ones were the Blazers. And invariably, there'll be 14 dunks, and the Blazers will have five. And that means the opponents have, there's misses in there as well. But like, why does the other team get so many dunks and our team doesn't? I don't understand why. Is it worth tracking?
Okay, so what do you hope to learn from tracking the other team's dunks?
Thank you. I don't think there's anything that I could learn that would be inspiring.
That's whenever I'm like, okay, should we collect these data? Like, well, what would we hope to learn from them?
I mean, ostensibly, if this team is really focused on improving on defense, dunks are an easy 2 points. And if we were to somehow make it harder for the other teams to get those easy 2 points, then we could theorize that they've solved that problem or that they've addressed that problem in their defense. So I guess that's what I would love to see at the end of the year. But do I want to subject my eyes to it after every game in search of these numbers?
Okay, so here is something that I was thinking might satisfy this without you thinking about them in terms of just literal dunks. What if they're offensive rebounds instead?
That is good because you know what? The
Because
Blazers.
giving up of offensive rebounds is something that people try to prevent, that don't
Right.
necessarily translate to points, but they translate to second chances and more possessions.
Sorry, are you saying track the opponent's offensive rebounds or track the Blazers' offensive rebounds?
Well, either. It kind of depends on what you want to know. But if you want to track something for the opponents, I think how many offensive rebounds they get against our team tells us something. In the same vein that dunks might tell us.
And might not be as demoralizing
Right.
for the researcher in this case.
Right. That's right. It might not be as demoralizing. And it also, like, I mean, that offensive rebounds often lead to dunks. Like, a lot of the times they're close to the glass. Like they're at least like they're often putbacks, I will say. They're not always putbacks, but they're often putbacks or a putback attempt.
I like where you're headed with this because we were just talking earlier about what the Blazers like on were they getting their dunks on fast breaks or on offensive rebounds ourselves. And because the Blazers are actually, they're currently number 7th in the league in offensive rebounds. They're not doing great on defensive rebounds, which leads me to believe they're not going to be doing great in the category of opponent offensive rebounds. But, you know, that's, I think that's, that is something worth considering. So I think I would rather track that than opponent dunks.
Same. It's less demoralizing.
Yeah. Less demoralizing. So maybe we'll test that out. Let me switch out. What was I going to switch out? I was going to switch out
opponent dunks.
Right. So we're going to add opponent offensive rebounds and then switch out assists for turnovers.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for, I'm glad to be talking with somebody who knows how to do actual research with actual data instead of me just making it up. So, okay, switching out turnovers for assists and then adding offensive rebounds for opponent. We'll try it for a couple of weeks and check in and see how it's going around 20 games or so.
Okay. That sounds good. And again, less demoralizing because I don't have to think about the actual dunks that I saw that hurt my feelings.
I know. It's just, it's hard. It's hard to go do that every night when I do that, when I do my recap. I just like, oh, this is going to be hard. It'd be like 23 dunks. That's just not a half and half situation.
Okay. This is good. This is less sad than what you had originally proposed to think about how many dunks the opponents had on us.
Yes. Okay. I like it. Should we move on?
Yeah.
Talk about the player of the episode.
Yes. So today we're going to talk about Malcolm Brogdon, who is unfortunately still injured because we all saw the Trailblazers PR tweet.
Also demoralizing.
Also demoralizing.
I have to say, though, I did see the Memphis Grizzlies PR injury report tweet, and that is even more depressing. So hope shout out to them for whatever they're going through. I hope that they survive it, because it is even worse if you look at just the length of it than ours is.
Yeah, and it's like guys I kind of forgot about, and I'm like, who are you going to play when the guy that I already forgot about is out?
Yeah.
So yeah, at least it's not as bad as that, and at least we have a G League team and a third string point guard, as we said earlier, so like it's not as bad as it could be. Okay. Malcolm Moses Brogdon, whose birthday is coming up in a couple of weeks. He is born December 11th, 1992, which makes him 30, turning 31 in a few weeks. He was born in Atlanta. His mom and dad are very, I think they're interesting, although we don't know a ton about them. They're not like as prominent, I feel like as prominent as some of the other players' parents who like are very visible and have done lots of interviews. And I don't know if you found anything about his parents. Oh, you did? Of course you did.
Yes. I don't know. Should we talk about it now or should we? I think let's wait till the end. His parents are they're very interesting.
They're very interesting. So Malcolm Brogdon's, his father is Mitchell Gino Brogdon Sr. And he's a lawyer. And apparently he used to host like a TV like court show.
That's what I did my deep dive on.
Oh, you did. He was the host of the show Personal Injury Court.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Would you like me to tell you about what I learned about? I'll just go ahead and tell you about
Personal Injury Court. Yes, please tell me about, because I did not read about Personal Injury
Okay,
Court.
So I watched 3 episodes of Personal Injury Court. Okay, so Personal Injury Court was a 30-minute TV show. It was produced in Atlanta along with like 2 other court-related shows. There was Personal Injury Court. There was Lauren Lake's Paternity Court, which focused on paternity testing, and then Couples Court with the Cutlers, which resolved relationship disputes. And then there's Gino Brogdon's Personal Injury Court. So Personal Injury Court was based on actual court cases, but they were not like real plaintiffs or whatever, not like People's Court where it's like the these are real plaintiffs. They were based on actual court proceedings that happened. And so actors come in, they like memorize everything about the case. And then he asks a bunch of questions and they answer the questions. And since it's personal injury, there's a lot of interesting things. So I watched one about a couple who went up in a hot air balloon that got like ran into a tent and they fell out and like broke a bunch of bones. I watched another one about a kid who got his, this is really gory, so fast forward 30 seconds, who got his hand caught in a shredder. Another one about you know, somebody who fell down on the playground. So the actors come up and present their cases, you know, for the for the sewer and the suey. And then sometimes they have like experts come in and read off the expert stuff. And then he makes his ruling. And the purpose of it is to like explain the laws and like why, according to the law, this person would be responsible and or this or these people are not responsible. So I actually learned a couple of things, but I was shocked that this is Malcolm Brogdon's dad, because Malcolm Brogdon is very buttoned up. You know, he doesn't, you know, he speaks very eloquently. Like, we love it when he gets interviewed because he always has something really interesting and deep and thoughtful to say. And this is not at all to say that Mr. Brogdon, Judge Brogdon, was not thoughtful, but he was this very like bubbly and like just really drawing people out. And it, you know, he has a court TV thing,
right?
So this series was on for a year, and in that year they made 120 episodes.
Oh my god,
I did not watch all of them. And the best part about it is that everyone would start, and he'd give like a little, as the judge, he'd give a little synopsis of the upcoming case. And then he'd go, "Now let's get into the legal sauce." And it was just, I just was like, I could not believe that this is Malcolm Brogdon's father, just because of the personality and just like, they just look very different. But I followed him on Instagram, and there's pictures, which I think are of him, like maybe he has lots of pictures with his grandkids, dotes on his grandkids, writes about his grandkids all the time. And guess who now follows TCB Biggs on Instagram?
Is it Mitchell Gino Brogdon Sr.?
Yes. So I don't know. I was so tickled because, I just like Malcolm is like has such a consistent image of who he is, and in my brain it didn't quite align with somebody who did a court TV, and now I know. I mean, it's kind of like, you're probably going to go way more into about like the family's history of education and how education and educators, and I have to say I learned from all of the episodes that I watched, I learned a little something about personal injury law.
Well, there you go. You learned something new as a result of our deep dive into Malcolm Brogdon. I when I said that they're less visible, I mean that they're kind of less visible in like his career. Like they have like his parents like definitely have their own like lanes that they are very visible. But like, you know how a lot of players, it's like their parents are always interviewed, like going to games and like talking about what they did to like bring their child up to be like a professional athlete. Like his parents are like, you know, they have their own thing.
They have big careers, like big important things that like they didn't leave.
So did his dad, this is a question maybe you can answer because I could not answer it. Is his dad an actual judge, or is he just a judge on the show?
No, according to his biography, he was for 10 years, he was a trial judge in the Superior and State Courts of Fulton County.
Okay.
So yeah.
Which is in Georgia.
Yeah. In Atlanta, which includes Atlanta. So yeah. Cause I looked that up. So like his whole CV on his, the place where he works, looks like he was an actual judge. They're not actually, it looks like he was a judge for quite a while.
Well, awesome. That's I need to watch some episodes of Personal Injury Court. I might learn something. So okay, so his dad, Malcolm Brogdon's dad, is a judge. is was a judge, is a lawyer and a mediator. I know he's been on CNN as like an analyst before. Like he's very like kind of out there in like the legal in for his in terms of representing his like legal profession. And Malcolm Brogdon's mom is the former chair of Morehouse College's psychology department, and now I believe she's the associate dean there for math and science. Her name is Dr. Jan Adams, and Malcolm Brogdon's brother is a practicing attorney, just like his dad, who also is his name is Gino, by the way. And I think that Malcolm's dad goes by Gino too, and not Mitchell. And then his other brother, he has two brothers. His other brother is also like going into law as well. I don't know. So his Wikipedia article says he's in law school, but who knows when that was last updated? I don't know. So like the through line on this family is very well educated, like involved in education. His mom is like deeply still involved in education, which is no surprise that Malcolm did 5 years at the University of Virginia where he played basketball and spent his fifth year getting a master's degree, which is like something that stands out to me just because like a lot of guys you hear about, like they, well, one, they don't finish their eligibility. And two, like a lot of guys don't graduate. Like there's a lot of criticism about how a lot of professional athletes or college athletes do not actually get their degrees. Some of them will exhaust even their eligibility, but still not finish their degree in 5 years. And Malcolm Brogdon finished both bachelor's in history and a master's in what is it, public policy? Is that right? Public policy. Yeah, a master's degree in public policy, both from University of Virginia. And I just think that's really interesting because, you know, he was quite old when he came to the NBA because he was committed to finishing his eligibility and getting a master's degree.
Yeah, did you? I was wondering like why he had 5 years, and it's because he redshirted his sophomore season. So at the end of his freshman season, he broke his foot and then took the next whole year off. And apparently, like he's been on the Woj pod a couple of times, and I believe it was on one of the Woj pod appearances. He talked about how he could have come back and played his next year. But he really, really wanted to give himself enough time to recuperate and make sure that he was ready to come back.
Yeah, I listened to that episode too, and yeah, and it was very, it sounded like he was like, it was partially his decision to just take it slow, which is great. So he has a master's degree. Like, I wonder how many guys in the NBA have master's degrees, to be honest. We hear a lot about like guys going back and finishing their degrees because a lot of them leave college before they graduate to come to the NBA, and I'm just curious like how many master's degrees or even or advanced degrees are floating out there among NBA players. I don't know. If anybody knows that, I would love to know. Okay, so he played for University of Virginia. He was like I'll say a highly decorated college player, the University of Virginia. So like you said, he didn't play a sophomore season, but he had a good freshman season. Let's see if I can name off all of his accolades here. He was a consensus second team All-American, first team All-ACC, and ACC co-defensive player of the year in the 2014-2015 season, which would be when he was a junior, when he so after he came back from injury. And then as a senior, but what would be his fifth year, I guess. He was no, I guess not. That would still no, when he was like a senior in his fourth year. He was named a finalist for the Naismith Trophy, and he was also ACC Player of the Year, ACC Defensive Player of the Year, first team All-American. And yeah, they retired his jersey there. Like he's a well-loved member of that basketball team. I think there was also a book that was written about the coach for who was the coach at that time, and Malcolm Brogdon is also featured in that book because he was a part of this guy's coaching career at University of Virginia. I forget who the coach is now. I forget his name.
And he has a name that, yeah, If you look up his name, while you're looking up his name, I was gonna add one more thing that I did find this one podcast called the Intentional Performance Podcast, and it was the only one where Malcolm went off his like sort of regular script, which he's super consistent with. And he was talking about as a kid how he wanted to go to Stanford, and it's kind of the theme was being an underdog. Like he wanted to go to Stanford or Florida State, and neither of them offered for him. I believe he said that he had an offer from Harvard, and that's where his grandma wanted him to go. But one of the things that stood out to me is he talked about being a high schooler and not being invited to the elite camps as a high schooler, where the college, where all the, the college scouts would come. And then when he finally did start getting invited to the elite camps, he was put in the auxiliary gym. And he talked about remembering that and always thinking they're gonna regret that, they're gonna wish that they put me in the main gym, because in the auxiliary gym, then the college coaches came. And so like wanting to earn his like the invite to the camp where he wasn't in the auxiliary gym. And I just thought that was interesting because I didn't even know that there was like an auxiliary gym at these camps. Like, we'll give you the invite, but you're gonna play over there and all the coaches are gonna go over here. So just like that through line of being the underdog. And then in the one in the Woj Podge that you listened to, is that the one where Woj asked him about like what did he think the stigma was that made him wait until the second he didn't get not getting picked until the second round, and how he really thought it was actually because of UVA that was more there's a stigma against the school, because the school always had these guys that stayed in for so long because they wanted to like finish their education, and so that just he thought that it had to do with that, because he got like lots of accolades and people really thought he did really well in the pre-draft stuff.
I was, it's funny because I was thinking about that, and when he said that, I was like, that makes sense to me. Like, you think about like, like University of Kentucky, like Kentucky and Kansas, and there's like definitely some schools out there that like that Jake basically are like considered, they're
Like
like
one
blue chip
stop,
school, they're like blue,
they're
they're
one
blue
and
chip
done.
schools. And like you go there to go for 1 year. Like, how many guys do you think are on that team for like that exhaust their eligibility?
And there definitely are players who do, but so many of the ones who make it to the NBA don't stay.
Yeah, totally. And I wonder, I was thinking about this too, like, because he was recruited to like back home, he to Georgia. And he didn't, it was, I and I, you know, I didn't. I understand why he wanted to go to the University of Virginia, but I'm also curious if, like, there was a reason why he didn't want to stay in Georgia. By the way, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I think it was the academics. I think that the University of Virginia academics were so high.
So yeah, the book that I'm was thinking about is called Intangible: The Story Behind Virginia's Bigger Than Basketball Program. So that's also like funny because it's like bigger than basketball is like, it talks a lot about like the values around basketball, but not just including basketball. And the coach's name is Tony Bennett, which is why I couldn't remember it.
I knew it was something like somebody else's name.
Like, James Dean, that's not right. Yeah.
Glad you looked.
So anyway, yeah, he's featured in that book as well because he was a part of the basketball program and also like a huge success of that basketball team. They retired his jersey there. Like, that's awesome. So he was drafted. He was drafted by the Milwaukee Bucks in 2016. So he was like quite an old rookie. 2016, he would have been like 24.
Yeah, not Arvydas
No.
Sabonis old, but definitely
Right. And then he was the rookie of the year. So I think it's funny, like we have another rookie of the year on this team. I didn't think I knew that about him, that he was rookie of the year. And also, I didn't know this. He was also one of the few players, I think one of two players now, to win rookie of the year and sixth man of the year.
and he was the first second round pick since 1966 to win Rookie of the Year.
Yeah. That's amazing.
It really is.
That's super duper amazing. And like, if you think about it, like, so he played with Milwaukee. He was there from 2016 to 2019. So he's played with Giannis. And then he was after that, he was traded to the Pacers. And I kind of forgot about that Pacers team, because that was the Pacers team, actually, speaking of Sabonis, with Domas before Domas went to the Kings. So he played with Domas, and they were, that was like kind of their core. For like from like 2019 to 2022, like Malcolm Brogdon was the point guard there, and Domas was the center. And I don't know, like that team just like, it's like lost. It's like lost in like the recesses of my brain. I like know it was a team, and I know I've seen them play and I thought they were fun, but I don't remember anything about that team other than what Caitlin jogged my memory when we had her on the other week.
He's really an under the radar. Like I knew his name. I absolutely knew his name, but I could not picture him in my head to save my life before he came to Portland. But he just like, he was such a journeyman. And yeah, only because Caitlin brought up the fact that Halliburton came in and they had to make a decision and they went with the future for Halliburton, which makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. Did I even remember that he'd spent that time in Indiana?
Yeah, it's wild. So then he went to Indiana and then he was traded to Boston. And it was like the first, when he went to Boston was the first time I heard him say, I don't remember where I heard him say this. It might've been when he was accepting his sixth man of the year award. He was talking about how, as soon as he went to Boston, like the first thing that they did is they sat him down and they're like, you're not going to start here, which is like the, you know, he wasn't, it was like the first time where he was like realizing, oh, I'm coming off the bench. And he just like embraced that role because Boston was a successful team. And they're like, we have a system here. We know what we want. And we know what role we think you can fill like to a very high degree. And that's what we want from you. And he just like embraced the role that they made for him. And then he ended up in being the sixth man of the year that year by embracing that role. And I think it's really interesting. So we were talking a little bit about stats. And I just want to say this very briefly about Malcolm Brogdon's stats is that like, he's been a pretty good three-point shooter, a good shooter in general, like his career. But one of the things that stuck out to me is when he accepted that role in Boston, like his stats went up. He was a better shooter. Like his, he still had really good reps. He still played a lot of minutes, but his, all of his percentages went up. And I think primarily because he was playing against the second unit. He was shooting like 38 to 42% ish from three most of his career. And in the year that he was with Boston, he shot almost 45%.
Oh man, what it would be to have a 3-point shooter on the team right now. I'm so sad that he's injured.
I know. It's. Anyway, I just thought that that was really like kind of nice to see that he like embraced this role that a lot of players might like, they, where he said he talked about how he had to check his ego at the door and how you check your ego at the door and like see what someone's actually offering you. And that's what he did, embrace the role. And like, as far as like his like efficiency all went up, it worked out for him to take on like a slightly different role. I'll say this, like, one of the things he did talk about was like, he's like, yes, I came off the bench. I still played a lot of minutes though. And at the end of the game, I was still in the game. Like he still knew that he had meaningful minutes to play. So it wasn't like his role had been reduced to something that he felt like didn't suit him or like didn't like, I don't know, like whet his appetite to play. Like he knew that he was still going to be playing a really important role. It's just where the minutes were in the game were slightly different than if he was starting. But he, like, it ended up being a really, really great role for him. And I think that that's just like a great, like, success story for somebody who had to do something that was very different than what they had been doing in their career up to that point.
Yeah. And, you know, he has been so consistently thoughtful and willing to share, like, his thoughts, what was going through his head and what it was like when he, because in one of the podcasts I listened to, he talked a lot about like getting the call from them. And I remember him saying, talking about how checking his ego. And he was like, well, you know, all NBA players have, you know, an ego. Like, you don't get there without having an ego. And I thought, of anybody who I would have thought maybe didn't have an ego, I would have thought it was him. Just because he's just so, like, so team oriented, so, like, big picture thoughtful. And, you know, on that same podcast, he talked about, it was when he was in Indiana and they were asking him about, or I think it was when he was in Boston, but they were asking about his role in Indiana and, like, did he like playing at a, in, you know, a smaller market with young developing guys. And he spoke at length about what he liked about that, which made me feel good given the position that he's in right now.
Yeah, totally. And I don't know if you also heard him say this. He said it in multiple places, so I can't ever remember, like, where all the places he said it, because he's a very consistent communicator about his career and life. Like, I heard him say, like, the same thing in, like, maybe slightly different words, like, multiple times. But he talked about how when he was in Indiana, like, you know, he had a really big role. You know, he was part of their core. And, like, they weren't so good. So maybe he was, like, he thought about, like, maybe I shouldn't necessarily be the number one guy. Which, like, I don't know many players who would say that out loud, even if they thought it. You know, like, maybe I'm not supposed to be the number one guy. Maybe I'm better as the number two or number three guy. And, like, just to, like, say that out loud in front of people, like, you have to have, an incredible amount of self-confidence to say that, in my opinion. For guys who, like, all have egos, who had to come up, like, having, like, ultimate belief in themselves as players. Okay, so I want to know what interesting things you learned about Malcolm Brogdon.
It was funny because I probably listened to, like, 8 hours of podcasts of Malcolm Brogdon.
I didn't listen to that many.
And I was, like, I was impressed by his consistency and also left feeling very unfair to him. Thought, this guy's kind of boring, which is totally unfair because he's fascinating. But, like, due to the fact that I mainlined, like, all of this Malcolm Brogdon content at once, and he was so consistent with everything, it just, like, all started to, like, sound the same. So I was, like, trying really hard to find, like, nuggets that weren't in his stories, because he had a lot of stories that he told over and over again that were super compelling and were really good stories, like, especially, like, those sort of, like, core memory events that he had when he was young and he went and visited Africa with his family multiple times, and, like, certain, like, pictures that he got in his head from those that have, like, motivated him and driven him his entire not even before he was an adult, drove him to be where he is today. So I was just, like, I had to figure out, like, does his whole family just sit around and be, like, consistent and smart all the time? Like, there's gotta be something that we're not showing, you know, that we're not seeing. So, like, I went and kind of, like, watched, some of the, like from the blogs of where he played, and, like, the Milwaukee Bucks, like, he and Thon Maker came in at the same time, and it looks like they're pretty good friends. And, like, I just thought that was, like, a kind of a fun friendship. And, like, he like, actually tags Thon and, you know, in a lot of his Instagram posts, like, they're pictured a lot together. And so it was kind of fun to see that friendship. Another thing that I thought was really interesting is, as a rookie, he was, like, the first person who put up his hand to become the NBPA rep for the Bucks. Like, as a rookie, he was like, ooh, I'll do it. And he was, like, willing and excited to do it. And I guess that's really unusual. I guess vets really don't always like to do it because they don't like to go to meetings. So they usually try to get the younger guys to do it. But for a younger guy to, like, throw his hand up in the air and be like, yes, I want it to be me. I thought he was so interesting, so compelling. And I just thought, I am really glad that he is on the Blazers. He's not necessarily somebody I would, like, be like, yes, let's go out to dinner. Because I feel like I hear the same stories, but maybe we'd have other stories. I don't know. So I was, other fun things I found out about him. He was the first rookie in Bucks history to get a triple double. So I can't wait till he gets a triple double with the Blazers, knowing that it's possible. But this is sort of emblematic of the fact that I had a really hard time finding out some of those fun little nuggets, like I'm usually able to find out about players, because he's just like so good at knowing what he's putting out there and what his image is, and you know, how he wants to be perceived so that he can make the impact in the world that he is so committed to doing. And that was another thing, is just like it was so clear that he has an absolutely clear vision of how he's going to impact the world.
Yeah, that's something that I didn't really mention that I hope we would, because I wanted to talk a little bit more at length about it, as opposed to just like getting sidetracked when we were talking about sort of his journey to the NBA. Like philanthropy and also like compassion are like, I feel like, really big parts of like who he is. I don't remember where I heard this again. He talked about how his one of the like formative things that happened to him in his life is that when he was young, I think he was like 10 or 11, his parents moved his family out of a middle class neighborhood and into like a developing neighborhood, in the Atlanta area, and how that was like a really important part of who he is, and how like, you know, he grew up like living among people who were a lot poorer than his family was, and people who like maybe were struggling with addiction or poverty, and these were all his neighbors and his friends, and he was not afraid of these people, and his parents like had to build connections in in that community that really impacted the way that he saw like people in the world and community. And you know, like you mentioned, he spent a lot of time like in his life, like he visited Africa. He's done a lot of like since he's like become more like stable and successful, he started his own foundation. He has the Brogdon Family Foundation, where he basically like his like primary mission is to build access to clean water and other opportunities in East Africa. So like, you know, his organization is really embedded in Tanzania and Kenya to build wells for communities that do not have access to clean water. And he spoke to the at the UN about that and about his family's work. One of the things that I heard him say, which, you know, because I come from public health, I dear near and dear to my heart, he talks about how like the impacts of clean water like really negatively impact the lives of women in communities without clean water, because women are the ones who have to go and fetch water for their families. And so those are that like reduces girls' opportunities to go to school, and the safety of women when they're making these long treks by themselves and they may not be able to protect themselves from people who will hurt them. And I was like, look at you out there being such a good advocate for this thing that has like nothing to do with basketball, but also everything to do with why he's involved in basketball.
Yeah, and he said that in numerous places that like his life's passion is like it's not basketball. It's like the basketball is the means to be able to make an impact. And I think a lot of guys I don't think that's like, you know, it's not unique. But I feel like a lot of guys maybe came to that a little bit later than he did. Like he came to that very early. He saw this as a way that he could have an impact. And I honestly felt like a little bad for thinking that he's kind of boring. So I'm trying to think about it as like he's not boring. He's just like super consistent. And, you know, he's like seems to be quite introverted in terms of like he's not the guy joking around with everybody constantly, you know, on the sidelines. He's just like sitting there very comported and probably thinking all kinds of deep, amazing thoughts. So I don't want anybody to think that I think that like he's boring in like a bad way. I just after having watched Judge Gino and seeing how much personality he had on the personal injury court and how outgoing he was about that. And I also watched a video of his mom thinking like, oh, maybe, you know, his mom is a little bit more reserved and he gets it from his mom. I watched a video of his mom accepting an award on Malcolm's behalf because, in addition to her job at Morehouse, she's also the executive director of the Brogdon Family Foundation. So she was accepting an award on his behalf. She was like the warmest, most like charismatic speaker, like through a YouTube video that was like a minute and a half long, and I was just like floored at how she, I just like, I was like, I want to be in her. I want her to be in my life. She's amazing.
And I don't know if you've ever met a mom you don't like, Tara.
It was just like, you know, he's just like, every family has somebody who's a little bit quieter than the rest of the family. And he seems like he's the one, and he's just like got a lot going on. Still waters run deep. So when I just see him sitting there on the bench, I'm like, he's probably got like so many amazing thoughts running through his mind. And I love it when the other younger players come and talk to him, because he's clearly like helping them out. And I love having him on the team. Love it.
So I'll say this. I've spent a lot of time listening to him, not 8 hours probably, but like I spent quite a bit of time listening to podcasts and videos where Malcolm Brogdon is featured or discussed. And you're right, this, my experience is the same. I heard a lot of the same stories again, a lot of the same points again about his life, slightly different words and different contexts, but in general the same like stories that he likes to make public about himself. That said, I can strongly identify with this idea of like the things that you are really comfortable talking about publicly and like making your peace with that, and also having these things that you are very private about. And one of the things that I was surprised to see that I had not seen mentioned in anything is that Malcolm Brogdon is married. You don't hear him talk about his wife. She's not mentioned hardly at all, but I see him wearing his wedding ring. I know he's still married. And I just thought that was very interesting. And it turns out he's married to a woman named Victoria Janowski, who he met in college. She was a volleyball player at University of Virginia. So far as I know, they're still married and going strong. And she works in like the legal like profession through like some like giant company. I don't know. But, you know, it's like he keeps that very separate from his basketball life. And I just like see that as like a way in which he like kind of like has the public part of him, where he tells us those stories and he's very polished and comfortable talking about that stories. And then he has other stuff that he just like keeps a little bit closer to his chest that he's a lot more private about, which I can appreciate because I feel that way too. And I will say that based on the one kind of funny little interview that I saw with him where Luke Cornett was interviewing him when they were on the Celtics together, it must have been for like the Celtics social or something, because it was very like jokey, but he made a joke about Malcolm Brogdon running for office one day, and he's like, you know, everybody says you're gonna run for office one day, like, are you gonna run for office one day? And he was like, I didn't say any of that. He deflected, but he didn't say no, and he didn't exactly like play along with this joke in a way that I thought he might. And I was like, you're not going to run for office one day is what I thought. And especially the way I've like heard him talk about his life over the course of his career. Like, he's very polished in his talking points. He's very polished in the stories he talks about. He knows exactly what he wants to say and the type of persona he wants to put out about himself. And I was like, it's an option on the table. I'm just going to go ahead and say that based on what I saw, I think it is an option on the table, and he's thinking it over. And like some sports players, like they retire and they run for office. Like we had Chris Dudley run for governor here in Oregon. Like, you know,
Bill Bradley.
That's right. Bill Bradley. Like we have a lot of people who leave athletics and run for office. And I'm just saying, I don't know that he's going to run for office, but I know that he hasn't decided yet, maybe.
Mm-hmm. That it doesn't appear, at least in that answer, that it's off the table.
No, and that was just like last year.
He's clearly like using that master's of policy of public policy. Cause like, I remember hearing him talking about the wells that he is building in Africa, and about how it's not just about putting in a well, but it's about all the policy and the infrastructure being in place for that well to continue and to make sure that it can be integrated and maintained in the thing. So like his big picture thinking about policy, like, yeah, we'll see. Another thing about him is like, you were talking about his privacy, like he's so private that I can't quite tell if he has kids or not. I think he has a daughter, but I'm not even sure. Mm-hmm. You know, it's various reports.
Yeah, he's like, I feel like a lot of NBA players, their family is like a very like, even if they're not like super visible, like we know about them. They come to games, they're like really integrated into like their like kind of public persona. When they win awards, they're all there. Like,
Well, we're used to Damian Lillard.
right. And now we have Scoot's family too. So like we have seen a lot of players' families. Not Malcolm Brogdon. We don't even know how many people are in his family. I just know that I see him in interviews wearing his wedding ring. And so I'm like, well, you're still married, probably.
Anything else we want to say about him? We should probably wrap it up here. Our time is getting away from us as usual. But he's a very interesting guy.
Yes. And I just want to say that like I have more to say about him, but we're gonna do another podcast in a week or so about that we'll talk a little bit more as foundation, which I'm excited to talk more about that as well.
Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah, should we go? I mean, I was like set to get a Malcolm Brogdon jersey. That was like, I was like, I've been debating which one I should get, and I was set to get it until the whole Jabari Walker thing happened. So what happened with the Jabari Walker thing is I was like, God, I would love to. I mean, Jabari's just playing so hard. He's playing so great and I love him. And I was like, I'd love to get a Jabari jersey. I bet that would be great to get a city edition. So I went to go look at it. And on the website, they do not have a Jabari Walker City Edition jersey. They have everybody else but Jabari Walker. For the Icon Edition, for the Association Edition, they all have Jabari Walker. So it's clearly it was just like an oversight, right? It's not like we're just not going to give Jabari Walker. And
I mean,
so,
I hope so.
yeah, I would assume so. The amount of people who told me I could get one custom made. I know I can get one custom made, but the point was the Blazers forgot to put up a page for Jabari Walker, Summer League champion, so that I could buy a City Edition jersey from it. So the Rip City clothing people actually reached out to me because I was saying things about him, and they were like, "Hey, you can get one." And I was like, "Okay, great." So they helped me like order one. And I said, but actually, the point is not so much whether or not I can buy one. It's are you guys going to put up a page? And he said that they were going to be working on that. So I will be checking them. And when they do finally get that page up, I will celebrate with them. And I will keep people posted to find out if I actually made a difference. But anyway, that's all to say I was going to get Malcolm Brogdon, but I didn't. But I was that excited about Malcolm Brogdon. The guy that sits next to me in the games. Actually, the first night, opening night, he was like, I love this Malcolm Brogdon guy. I love this Malcolm Brogdon guy. And then eventually, the fourth quarter, he's like, I'm going to go buy a Malcolm Brogdon jersey. I'm in. So he did. He went and he got a Malcolm Brogdon jersey and he got a Malcolm Brogdon 92 jersey. Remember for like the 5 minutes
Yes,
that he was number 92?
I
So
do remember.
he actually got a Malcolm Brogdon 92, which
That's
I thought was
actually
awesome.
great, and I love that so much. So I told you last week that I bought a DeAndre Ayton jersey, but I've been like already plotting my next one, and I will say that right now, like I am really torn because one, for the same reason you want Jabari Walker, I really want a Skylar Mays jersey. But like they don't make one yet. But he just got converted to like a full contract. So I assume the Skylar Mays jerseys are being printed and put on that site as we speak. And if they're not, I will be very disappointed because I just love a backup point guard. I'm not just gonna say it. I love a backup point guard. And the other jersey that I have been thinking about, but Skylar Mays is one, and the other one is Tumani Kamara. Because I mean, obviously, we all know and love Tumani Kamara. But the other thing about Tumani Kamara that I love, that people just don't love the way that I love, or maybe they do and they just don't say so, he's left-handed, and I am left-handed, and I love a left-handed. I really loved Rodney Hood. I love a left-handed basketball player. It's like there's something about being left-handed where as soon as you see somebody do something, you're like, that person's left-handed. Like you always see it. It's the first thing you see when somebody does something that like demonstrates their handedness. I always know it's like that's a lefty. Even sometimes when they're doing something with their right hand, I'm like, that's a lefty. I can tell what it looks like somebody doing something with their right hand that is awkward and weird. So anyway,
I
Tumani
think
Kamara.
just watching your physical reaction that you need to get a Kamara jersey. I think that's your next one.
I just love a left-handed. I just love basketball players that remind me that, like, I feel that make me feel seen, I guess.
That there's other people struggling with scissors too.
Yes, that's right. Although I do use scissors right-handed because they never got me left-handed scissors in elementary school. And it was like, well, you learn this or you don't get to use scissors.
Or you don't get to cut anything.
So to this day, I still use right-handed scissors, but my daughter's left-handed and I got her lefty scissors. Okay, Tara, we're definitely over time, but we've come to the portion where I ask you, it's the end of the podcast. What is your take this week?
Mine is pretty straightforward, and that is when Ant and or Malcolm Brogdon return, things are going to be fine. I mean, they're not going to like contend for a championship, but everything is going to look so much better, and we're going to be able to just breathe one sigh of relief. We just need one pro guard, one pro ball handler back, and one vet ball handler back, and things will be fine. That's my take.
That's a good take. I agree with that take. Anything that's stabilizing is nice.
What's yours?
My take is kind of hot. And I have to give you just a small story about it.
Okay.
So I watched a Kings game earlier this week. And in the post game, like, interview or whatever, they interviewed Malik Monk because he had a good game. And they asked him to weigh in on, well, who won or who would win a dunk contest between De'Aaron Fox and Chris Murray, I think, on the team or whatever.
You mean Keegan?
And I think, no, Keegan. Yeah, sorry, Keegan Murray. Whatever. Chris Murray's brother. And he was like, oh, it would have to be me. Like, I think that's basically what he says or something. Like, he's like, I forget how it happened, but it was just like, it gave me this idea. And I thought about this for like all of 8 seconds before I tweeted it out. So sorry. Instead of an all-star game dunk contest where they just look for stars and there are none, and then it's just a bunch of guys who are all just willing to do it, who are all like early career guys because that gives them visibility, they should have a host team, an all-host team dunk contest. So just the team that is hosting, all of the players from the host team do a dunk contest, and it is like, it is for bragging rights in the locker room. Because so, I feel like those guys probably go way harder at practice in a dunk contest than they ever would when they're trying to like do it for like all-star or whatever.
So the point being is that there would be a dunk contest with only players from the host team, but they would have all the eyes of everyone at All-Star Weekend and watching All-Star. They would have all the eyes on them. Yes. That would be kind of fun.
Also, they're in their home city. They're in their home arena. Their fans would love it. It would be like a peek into a practice, right? Mm-hmm. And they would get to see these guys like cut loose and also try to like dunk on each other. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, there's not a good reason for a lot of guys to like participate in the dunk contest anymore. Like, it's been really hard to get guys. Last year it was like the guy who won was in the NBA for like 3 weeks before he like was in the dunk contest. Like, nobody wants to be in this dunk contest. So let the host team do it and show off. And some of these guys are going to be really great dunkers and showcase dunking that probably they would never even do in games. Mm-hmm. Guys who don't even dunk in games.
Yeah.
Let them all dunk. Everyone from the front of the bench to the end of the bench, everybody dunks.
I like it. Hashtag everybody dunks.
Yes. And I knew you would like it because I know how much you like dunks. And someday when Portland gets a all-star game, we would love seeing every single Blazer dunk.
Yeah, because they can all do it. It's just, you know, some more than others. I like it. I like your take. I approve, and we can send this into the league for for an idea. Well, it has been so great talking to you, as it always is, learning about Malcolm Brogdon and going over the stats, but we got to cut it off now. And do you want to tell people where they can find you on Twitter or whatever is your preferred platform these days?
Yeah, you can find me at Roselle Harding on Twitter, on Instagram, on Blue Sky, and you can also find me in the We Have a Take Discord. Tara, where can people find you?
They can find me at TCB Biggs on Twitter and on Instagram, and they can find the We Have a Take podcast on Twitter. And you can also find the podcast to listen to and subscribe to wherever you find our find your podcast. So thanks everyone, especially if you've gone this far to the very bitter end. We appreciate you all so much for listening to the We Have a Take podcast, and go Blazers!